Welcome back after our short break. And now it will be Josh Green, the developer and maintainer of Fluidsyn, and the developer of Swami, the sound font, and I think at the moment also Giga Sample Editor. And well, just yesterday, you see the conference is every time good occasion to release new software, and Josh did. He did release a new version of Swami. And now it's Josh Green with sampled instruments, sampled waveforms and musical instruments. I'm sorry, Josh, please.
No problem. Thank you, Julian. Thanks for coming to my talk on Swami, which has been consuming my life for about 6 years now. So without further ado, let's get into it. To start, I would like to... This presentation you're about to see may contain unstable code, incomplete features, and unsettled application programming interfaces. While we are confident that the highest quality care and determination has been applied to this project, we cannot be held responsible for any loss of sanity it may cause. So, yeah. Entering the development zone. Okay, presentation overview. Pretty simple. I'm just gonna talk to you what is Project Swami? And then go into some instrument format comparisons of what's currently supported in the program and what's planned, and do comparison of those formats. Then I will go into more of the underlying architecture of Swami, since it can be used in other applications. And then go into some Python binding stuff, and then talk about what are some ideas behind making instrument design more easy, and what does Swami currently have, and what our plans for making it easier. And then I'll go into CRAM, which is an instrument compression format that was created for this project. And then I'll go into an instrument database that I've been working on for the internet for creating an open forum for distributing instruments in a free manner. Unfortunately, I had suffered a data loss, so I won't be able to demo any of that, but it'll be back up shortly. And then I'll talk about interfacing with other projects, and I think I'll be throwing the software demo stuff all around in between the different items throughout the presentation. And the question and comment section will be at the end. So, what it is, Project Swami is an instrument editor, manager, basically, and it will be a librarian. It's not quite there yet. A librarian, you know, would more allow you to... keep track of all your instruments and categorize them in a nice database-like fashion, so it's easy to find, you know, that particular instrument when you're looking for it. That type of functionality is starting to be coded into the web interface that I've been doing, but it hasn't quite made its way into Swami yet. It's cross-platform. It doesn't have very nice packages yet for Windows or Mac, but it has been seen to run on those systems. It's also coded in using libraries for to be leveraged in other software as well. So that's basically that part of it. What it isn't is basically, I just wanted to, you know, note kind of what other types of software it would be useful for interfacing with. And, you know, audio editing applications, while it does have some, you know, Swami has a primitive kind of sample loop editor, and there will be some functions and there are simple things. It's not meant to be an audio editor. It will probably more leverage off of other software for that. And software synthesizer, it's not. It uses FluidSynth currently, and it uses it in a way that one could, in fact, write other plugins to other synthesizers if one wanted to. And MIDI sequencers, of course, it's not, and I don't plan to make it that. It's something that would be connected to a MIDI sequencer. So, just a little information about where Swami came from and what the timeline has been. Started off in about 99 when I got a nice, you know, Sound Blaster R32 card, and I was like, I want to play some instruments and make some instruments with this thing. And at the time, there was the OSS, you know, driver written by Takashi Iwai, and I saw some initial code that he had and said, okay, I'm going to try to make an editor, and that was how Smurf Sound Font Editor was born. And at some point, I realized that Smurf was copyrighted, the name, and I didn't want to run into any problems with that. And I also realized that, you know, being dependent on a hardware audio card was a bit... you know, I couldn't play it on my laptop. So I decided at the point, I was contacted by Peter Hanap, who wrote Fluid Synth. I'm not actually the author of Fluid Synth, just currently the maintainer, and I'm not a very good one at that. But so he contacted me because he had borrowed some of the code, as we like to do in this type of open source arena. And he borrowed some of the just sound font loading code. So he had said, well, we should try to interface the programs. And at that point, he wrote a nice API for me to communicate with his synthesizer. So at that point, the project was renamed because a lot of it was rewritten. And I did take out a lot of the instrument logic and try to separate it from the GUI. And at some point, the development branch was forked, which is the current development branch that I've been working on since 2003. And it was, you know, to port it to GTK2 and all based on GObject, essentially. And then at some point, CRAM came about as an idea that, you know, there's a lot of proprietary compression formats out there for instruments, but they either only support a few formats, don't provide a compressor, a decompressor, or one or the other in Linux. And so that the last branch, actually, this is now outdated. I just released the last version of the 9.x branch just yesterday, so this needs to be updated. Okay, and then at this point, I have not yet released a stable version of the development branch, though it is going to happen soon. Okay, instrument formats. This is kind of, there's varying degrees of support right now in SWAMI for different formats. Sound font is by far the most supported because that's the one I've been using from the beginning. DLS and GigaSampler are supported to a certain extent. The remaining work mainly involves the effects parameters and things, and how the units of measurement used for those, and how they controlling those basically, and then others is just more of an idea of what will be added in the future. Okay, and this is basically kind of a format comparison of the. I'm no GigaSampler expert, so I kind of just briefly. Went over the specs for GigaSampler and what I know of the file format, but the Linux Sampler project is much more up to date on in the GigaSampler since that's primarily what they're supporting at this point. Basically, the synthesis architecture is you've got envelopes, you've got low frequency oscillators, you have certain filters, reverb, and chorus, things like that. Sound font up to just recently was only 16-bit. At this point, there has been a 24-bit extension added, which is backwards compatible. So older systems or software will see it as 16-bit. There's modulators, which is basically a nice way to hook up some MIDI controls to different effects and control them in real time. I'll be showing those later in the talk. And some of the other differences is that the ways in which the instruments are laid out. In the case of DLS, it's basically just like a two-tier, which I call it. It's just like you've got an instrument, and it contains sample zones, or if you want to call them, and which contain the parameters for each of those samples and how they're layered and whatnot. And then you have the sample pool, which is just all the samples that are referenced by the instruments. SoundFont, on the other hand, is a three-tier, and it kind of is a nice feature, but it's something that you can get around with in software just by providing a method of applying. The preset concept basically allows you to apply effects on top of other instruments, so you could take instruments, put them in a collection, and then have them referenced by a preset. So I'll be showing more of that in a second. The other thing is just the parameter resolution. SoundFont is basically 16-bit parameters for all the synthesis, and DLS is 32-bit. If you're not really familiar with DLS, it stands for Downloadable Sounds. It was created by the MIDI Manufacturers Association, and it has been adopted by MPEG-4. And you can find implementations in such things as the Microsoft Media Player and other things like that. The bizarre thing about this standard, though, is that it hasn't really been adopted, I think, to the extent that it could be, because, in my opinion, it is kind of a nice format. It's just, it is more flexible than SoundFont as far as the file format's concerned. And it basically has the same synthesis model as Soundfong. They were kind of copying their idea, essentially. GigaSampler, on the other hand, is a pretty different architecture for playing audio. It has more envelopes and more LFOs, and each LFO is assigned to a particular effect rather than being combined with some effects like DLS and Soundfont are. And so it gives you kind of a bit more control over that. It also has a lot of other, special features that make things nice for, say, cross-fading samples as you play up and down the keyboard. A lot of that stuff can be emulated with the other formats. It's just providing nice software interfaces to do such things. The other difference with GigaSampler is that it uses the idea of dimensions, which is basically a way of triggering samples based on a particular input, say, the key range on the MIDI keyboard. Like, if the key range is the first part, when it triggers a particular sample based on what key you press. And then you can have velocity dimension, which would say, okay, if you're pressing this key and it's this velocity, then it would play this sample with these effects. So that's kind of, each time you add another dimension, it basically does that. It adds another, parameter that can control the selection of a playing back of a sample. The one thing about GigaSampler is it's very, the parameter ranges are pretty small. It's not very, sometimes they're smaller than even Soundfont, actually. But I don't know if that's necessarily a problem in practice. Some pros and cons. Soundfont's very popular. It's an open standard, and it does at this point have 24-bit, which is nice. It's been something missing for a while. The file format's really not that flexible. Single file architectures, it's limited to the file system that you're using on your system. In this case, it's RIF. Actually, RIF is limited to 2 gigabytes because of how it describes sizes inside the file. DLS is also an open standard. One unfortunate aspect of it, though, is that you still have to purchase the version 2 documentation if you want to get any information on it. So that's kind of one problem with it. It essentially looks like Soundfont, except it's more flexible, and it embeds WAV files right into the file format, so you can, theoretically use other formats of audio. It's just not required for compliance of DLS. GigaSampler, my biggest complaint about GigaSampler is it is proprietary. But otherwise, it is a nice format in how it does the synthesis, and it does have ways of breaking it up into multiple files and 24-bit support and whatnot. Okay, so Swami architecture. It's basically written in GObject using GTK2, and right at this point, it's composed of 3 libraries. LibInstrumentPatch, I've been thinking of abbreviating it iPatch instead. But it handles basically loading and saving to files to basically object trees in memory. So you can think of an instrument file as being a collection of objects in a tree type form. It handles sample conversion and instrument object conversions. Like if you want to convert it, a lot of that work hasn't yet been done, but it's waiting there to be done as far as converting between different formats. And it's got an object pay system, which tries to be smart about how, when if you drag an object to, another instrument, what it actually copies there and how it converts that. LibSwami is another, so LibInstrumentPatch is meant to basically just be the fundamental part of manipulating an instrument and saving and loading it. And LibSwami is more glue on top of that handles, the biggest part of it actually is the control networks, which allows for nice things like Model View Controller inside of the GUI. It basically, the G value container is part of GObject, and it's essentially like a type container where you can put like integers or floats or strings or define types actually even, or even just other GObjects inside of it. And so this is a way of, you can have multiple nodes and you can connect them together. Say an interface slider on the interface will be a GUI control. I can show some of that now, actually. Enough theory. So let me show you just a little bit of what the Swami interface at this point looks like. So one thing you can do is you can right click on a trough here, and I can, you know, create a new location for something like this, just drag and drop to it. And so now I've basically got the same view of the same instrument, this basically right here. And it's, you know, as you can see, as you move one, it'll move the other. It's just, and that's what's being handled by the value control network. And actually, they're out of sync. Bug. Interesting. and so that's supposed to be handled by the G value control networks. And that also handles the routing of MIDI events and basically any type of parameter control or changes, and helps to synchronize the rest of the system. The LibSwami is also responsible for handling the wavetable drivers such as FluidSynth and other plugins like automatic sample tuner that I've been working on. On top of that is the GUI, which I've written also as a library so that it can be linked to, and it's also object-oriented in the way it does things. Okay, well, let's talk about this a little more. So here's, I'll show you some of the file structures of what I was talking about before. Let's open up this one. This is a sound font right here. And as you can see, there's presets, instruments, and samples. And so at the bottom of this whole thing is, you know, a bunch of samples. And as you can see, there's, you know, the sample data for it. And essentially, so at the bottom of the tree is the samples. And then on top of that, you have, you know, say an instrument like, you know, fifth saw wave. Let's see. So that's a fifth saw wave. Doesn't sound that great. And so under here, you have basically all the samples layered inside the instrument. And you can see how they're split out on the keyboard here. And so in this case, there's four samples being played every time you play a particular note. And let's go to something. And so on top of, and as you see, there's presets on top of this. So like, you know, harpsichord, these are all references to other instruments. If I say go to link, it'll go to the instrument that it's pointing to. Okay, and what's also loaded here is I have some GigaSampler files loaded. This is a GigaSampler file right here. There's just basic, very basic synthesis of them right now, and there's not really much editing support yet. You can change the sample data if you wanted to, but that's about it at this point. Most of that is basically just pending, and there's not much, you know, related to do but to it, but there's a little bit. But. So synthesizing GigaSampler through FluidSynth. And then there's like one DLS file, I think, in here somewhere. But I'm not going to look for it. Okay. So the next thing I wanted to kind of go into was the Python binding and what how that ties in. So a lot of times when you're doing editing of instruments, you end up with a lot of work of cutting, pasting, clicking, doing a lot of stuff to try to change a lot of instruments. You know, when you end up with, you know, a huge instrument, you know, file that contains quite a lot of samples, it's really hard to manage sometimes. So I realized that a lot of, you know, not all functionality could be built into the interface. So that's where Python came into play. And so at this point, it's got bindings for all three of those libraries that are part of Swami. And so here's just a simple script I wrote to basically set the optimal ranges of an instrument. You know, because if you have multiple samples in a sampled instrument, as you scale a certain sample up or down the keyboard, the farther you get away from its root frequency, the worse it sounds, essentially. So the idea is that when you're creating instruments, you're making it so where you're sampling it at multiple locations across the scale, the pitch scale of the instrument. And so oftentimes I've noticed that, you know, somebody didn't split the instrument in an ideal manner as far as how the samples are laid out. So this was just a simple script I used as a demonstration. So let's find one that could be. Okay, so here's one that, you know, just it's all consecutive samples, as you can see inside here. There's just, you know, different, looks like five different octaves sampled with A, you know, the note A. And so if I run the script, you'll see it all click into some other place. So I guess it wasn't optimal, at least as far as if my code's right. So just to go over this script a little bit and what it does, it basically, right here you can see it, it grabs a selection of the current tree, essentially, for the root application. And once it gets the, it's just basically a list of objects. And then in Python, you can loop over it with an iterator. So I'm looping over each item, checking to see if it's a sound font instrument, which in that case it was. And at that point, it grabs all the children of the instrument, which in this case are all these zones right here, which contain the parameters and effects that are part of it. And for each, so there's just, you know, one thing is that there's global zones in sound fonts, which don't actually contain a sample. It's more of like providing default parameters for the other zones that are in the instrument. So you could set, like, say, a default value for reverb, and it would be used for the other instruments or the other zones as long as they're not overriding it. So it just makes sure that it's not a global zone. And then it gets a note, the note root note number, essentially, which is the root note that the sample was originally recorded at. And at the point, it creates, you know, basically tries to figure out what the optimal ranges are for them. Some other scripts that I did was just a startup script to load a bunch of sound fonts from a particular directory for this demo, essentially. And there's another script, say I wanted to close everything. Oops. But then I can go and it loads it all again. So those are just scripts I made for this talk. Let's see what else. So that's a bit about the Python binding. And the nice thing about the Python binding is you don't have to, you know, it's all object-oriented. You don't have to deal with some of the nastiness that is GObject and C for trying to do object-oriented coding. The next part I'd like to go into is modulators, which are basically allow you to control effects in real time. And so if we, there's modulators in a lot of these formats. Sound font contains modulators and DLS and GigaSampler to a certain extent as well, except it's not really the same model. And so if you look, you know, you can define modulators inside of an instrument itself, but I think much more useful is to define modulators at the session level, because you don't really, you know, a lot of times if you're distributing a sound font, somebody's going to have a completely different setup. They're not going to necessarily want to be controlling the same effects with the same, you know, MIDI controllers and whatnot. So it's more of a session thing to me. So that's what I've done, is I've created a just basically session modulator. So let's find something that doesn't sound too bad here. These are all like experimental sounds that I've done. That'll work. So at this point, here's all the list of all the modulators I've created. So for a particular one, let's take an example here. This is using basically MIDI controller 20, and you can see right here in this area there's this drop down that basically allows you to select a math function to map the incoming parameter value to the actual effect. And then this is what it's being applied to, which there's a bug there, it looks like. But it's being applied to the filter cutoff. So this is this control right here. So that's basically that one. And you can see there's a bunch. I've got all the other controls on here mapped. So. Okay. And so some of the other parts of the controls that I wanted to control is pretty much the volume envelope is very useful to, like, if I wanted to add more sustain. Too much. So that's like the release of the volume envelope. And then you've got the attack of the volume envelope. And then there's a modulator envelope in sound fonts, which you can basically control, like, let's try this. So that's you know, driving the filter effect down. And then okay. There's a pitch bend, which doesn't really sound too good. Okay. So those are some of the effects that are the most useful to me usually. There's also an LFO that's part of sound fonts. So it's back to the normal. Okay, and then. Let's pick another sound. I'm tired of that one. Let's see. That sounds better. So there's just the LFOs at work. And then, let's see. So making instrument design easy, that's, you know, oftentimes as programmers, you end up programming on your application much more than actually using it. And my whole idea of beginning this project was that I wanted to, you know, use it to design instruments. And at this point, it's not quite to my liking yet. There are some things that are being added that are nice, but it's not quite there yet. But the first part is, of course, obtaining the sample data. And for that purpose, I've wanted at times to be able to just record some audio of something and then have to take out slices of the audio in an easy manner. And so that's more of a future project for this application. It's not quite there yet. Taking existing sample data, of course, is another one, and that, you know, involves importing loop data if it's present or instrument data. And then, of course, synthesized audio, which I would like to, you know, put some work into that into Swami as well. For looping, you know, a lot of times when you want to make a continuous sound, you loop them, of course, and it can be very tedious to find good loops, and that's one area where I've been, somebody has been helping me, Louis, I can't remember his last name at this point, he's in the author's file. He just recently joined on and he's been helping with some of the aspects of Swami. So let's give that a demo actually at this point. So let's say I want to create a new sound font here. So here's a new one, and then we're going to add a sample. I'm just going to. It captures key presses just anywhere in the program, so as you type, it plays back for you. A little toggle to be able to turn it off would be nice, but not there yet. Okay. So here's just a. Just a simple sound that I recorded with a guitar. And so at this point, it would be nice to have a loop point on it. And, you know, you could, you know, basically define your own loop point by, you know, dragging this. And you can see this little cross section over here. This is an overlap of the start and the end. You can see the green is the start and the end. If I can get it. The end is in red. So like a good loop point, it causes all of them to be yellow. So let's do a find here and hope this works, right? It's rather new code. So currently we just have a simple dialog for testing the auto loop finder, but eventually it'll be built into the sample editor. So let's do like a minimum loop size of that. And let's do 40,000. Okay, and then we'll do like maybe 20,000. I like those zeros. Okay, cut and paste doesn't cause it, I guess. Okay, and then analyst window, let's make that about like 100. Okay, so not the easiest to use at this point, but then you can start analyzing basically for optimal loops. And here we go, and 1024 by 768 is. So it's not that much to work with, but there we go. so not too bad for automatically finding it. And then if you want, you can keep going down through other optimal ones that it's found. So we could say, okay, that sounded all right. And let's create a new instrument to put this in. And we could split this view, add some property controls. And let's give it a name. Let's call this, where is it at? It's a new preset, new instrument. So we'll call this sitar. So, and let's just copy and paste this guy into here. So at this point it was a one shot, and now we can make it a standard looping sound. And so then let's add it back into the, let's paste it again, if it works, yeah. And right now, currently, this is the next phase is to, essentially what you're seeing here is a list of all the properties of any object that is clicked on in the tree. And so it can be rather daunting and not very user-friendly, but it was the fastest way to get everything up and running to be able to edit any parameter in an instrument. So in this case, you know, it's going to be funny to try to, let's see, fine-tuning, okay. So we're going to modify. So I'm taking one sample, and now let's create a global zone here. Oops. First crash of the... Gotta not do those. Okay, go, Swami. So global zones are bad, currently. One has to realize that. It's dumping a core, I think, is what it's doing right now. Okay. that was the basically the auto loop finder, which I was showing before. And a crossfader would be the next aspect of that, because when you do get a good loop, sometimes you just want to force it to be better. Oh, there we go. Hello. And so that would be where a crossfader would come in handy. You could crossfade basically the start and the end loop with each other and end up with something that is even more smooth than when you automatically found it. The other thing I've been working on is the auto-tuner. And it would be also nice to be able to play along side reference tones. So I'll show the auto-tuner real quick. Okay, so let's, we could have, let's start that one again. It's not too hard. Load samples. Okay. So at this point, the auto tuner is at this location. Another bug. Okay, it's working here, not there though. Well, I'll show you tuning with this one because it's already done. As you can see, it shows you a spectrum of the instrument, basically the sample in this case, and it finds the peak power of it and tries to determine what would be the optimal MIDI note to place it at. And it's usually right on to some extent. Every once in a while, it's not. As you can see, this is supposedly an A5, and I think that's probably the right one, but sometimes there's difference, a one-off, as far as how people label them and how they come up, but that's an A6. So you can see they're showing pretty much what these are identified as. And so that makes it pretty easy for tuning your samples. Okay. And then the other thing is, of course, to assign your samples to optimal splits, which was that script I showed you. And so something like that could be used to do that. Okay, the next thing I wanted to get to was CRAM instrument compression, which is a format, like I said, that I created to compress instruments. And it's really actually just a hybrid compression. It compresses, it uses a binary compressor, zlib in this case, to compress the binary portion of a file, and then it uses FLAC currently to compress the audio portion. And you know, this is because binary compressors are normally good at binary, but not necessarily as good as audio is, and so FLAC is more targeted at audio. And so in this case, I'm using those two compressors to compress the different components of a file, and then they're just decompressed at the, you know, when you decompress them, it's a generic process because it understands that it's just interleaved chunks of audio and binary. And a nice thing about this is you can also, with FLAC, take advantage of stereo, you know, like if there's multiple mono samples and they're spread out in a file, such as in SoundFont, you can compress them as if they were stereo, and you know, get some compression, increased compression in that case. It handles multiple files, so you can compress an archive of files. If it's an instrument that contains, say, a README, you can just throw that in there too. So yeah, as more encoders are added, the encoders are very have an idea of what the format looks like, but the decoder is generic, like I said. Future would be adding lossy vorbis audio compression, which for a musician isn't so good, but in an internet setting, it might be nice to have, you know, like a MIDI file on a page that contains its own instruments that are very small and compact, and when played back, they sound, you know, just as good. And unfortunately, I can't show any demo of this. I didn't quite get my act together. It was up and running at some point, and then I forgot the data was on OneDrive and it was on another, and so I lost a good portion of it. But the code is still around, so I just have to piece it back together. But yeah, it's essentially a SoundFont DLS GigaSampler repository that is, you know, stores all in a nice database for indexing, and it will be categorized and allows users to contribute their own material. And you know, like some future ideas for it would be pre-listening via streaming, like if you wanted to, say, pick an instrument and then bring up a form, or perhaps a Java application, maybe. But you know, bring up a form would be the simplest, and just give it a sequence of notes and it would play it back, and then you'd be listening in via like Ogg Vorbis streaming or something like that, and hear what the instrument sounds like before you go and download that 128 megabyte file or whatever, you know. So that was one idea. And then basically synchronizing the database with a local copy of Swami and allowing you to browse an online repository of instruments and download them. So that's some future stuff there. Interfacing with other software. I've, you know, currently FluidSynth is the primary, I mean, it's the only actually synthesizer that Swami is using currently. But I would like to kind of like try and work with other programs like Linux Sampler, which seems to be becoming a pretty good synthesizer. And not much talk has happened in that area, but it's a direction I want to go into. A GStreamer plugin would be nice too, you know, the ability to convert between instrument formats and to interface to the network of GStreamer multimedia components. You know, I went into the audio editor stuff. A DSSI Synth plugin would be really nice because currently many sequencers, such as Muse, and I don't know if Rose Garden has it yet, but I know many of them are implementing DSSI, which is a way of embedding a soft synth into a sequencer. So that's another area I'd like to look into. Of course, help is wanted. it's been quite a lot of work, and it's fun, but at the same time, it's been 3 years of development at this point, and without a release, and that's, you know, quite a long time, and it would probably be speeded by having other people on board. So coders, web designers, graphic and icon artists, you know, just people that are interested in testing things out is really cool too. So I guess that's about it. Thank you.
So now it's question answer session again, and I have got the first question for you, Josh. The DLS sound format, you say you like it very much. Is it already supported by FluidSynth, or is it planned to be supported by FluidSynth?
Well, the thing about FluidSynth is that they a nice API was written to basically instantiate voices through, I use it as a shared library. I'm doing actually all the instrument processing in Swami. And then when you play a note on the keyboard, it's instantiating voices in real time with Fluid Synth. So it basically handles like a sound font-centric model of synthesizing. So at this point, I can play back DLS, essentially, with Fluid Synth.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, anyone else has got a question? Please shout to me and I can come.
Matthias König from Germany. I have a question about those tuning you do by FFT. Does this really work reliable and accurately?
No.
I guess that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it works a lot of times, but oftentimes you end up having to select, it comes up with a list of all the frequencies that it found, and you end up having to go, oh, that's not the right one, this is the right one. So I could automate it more in that. If you're just tuning instruments that have already been tuned, then it could probably get a good idea of what it should be. But if it's something that you haven't even tuned yet, it's going to have less of an idea. And at that point, you're going to have to do some manual type intervention. But the idea is that eventually I would build a dialogue around this that would allow you to, say, batch tune a bunch of instruments. And it would kind of show you which ones it thinks are more right than others or something of that sort, and some criteria for automatically trying to get closer to it. A lot of these tools, of course, aren't perfect. It's like it just gives you an added layer of being, convenience. And once they fail, you go the manual route like you would normally have to. There you go, Miguel.
Okay, anyone else?
I have a question all the way over here.
You can pass back there. Yeah, pass it back.
I'm Eric Lyon from Manchester in the UK. I have a kind of question, suggestion. This is an excellent simulation of the model of a synthesizer, but one of the nice things of doing it on a computer is you can map things however you want. And it seems one of the nicest things to be able to do is, in addition to having individual patches, to maybe be able to either algorithmically or in some other way create mappings where, rather than having just a related sample, you have, say, a harp mapped to just two keys and other samples sort of map otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have you thought about doing something like that, or do you see it as being very flexible for programmatically doing that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, most of these formats are flexible in that regard. When you look at, say, an instrument, and here, there are samples laid out, over the keyboard, and you can layer them if you would like. There can be multiple ones. And these samples don't, could be a harp, they could be a guitar, it's not,
Understood. But
yeah.
What I'm thinking is, in order to do that, it looks to me like it would be a little painstaking that each mapping you have to drag them in. But what I'm thinking would be really cool is if you have a sort of
virtual instrument, basically.
Yeah, and you could assemble it however you want it.
Yeah, that is something that there was a little bit of support for before in the older Smurf sound font editor, and it's something I'm planning for this one. But yeah, it's the ability to create like a session where you can just take the instruments that you want from different files and create a pseudo instrument that you're just using just for that session, or instrument bank rather. So yeah, that's a good feature, not yet available.
Question and answer session. There's always, I think, time for some private discussions afterwards. After this talk, it will be now a lunch break here in Germany and an hour of rest everywhere else in the world. At 2 p.m., our time, there will be the next talk here, Frank Wagnecht, 128 is not enough, structures in pure data. And of course, the track in the media theater will also continue. So, have a nice break. Thank you, John.
All right, thank you.